Some of the Republican presidential candidates are performing a new aerobic exercise in Iowa today, the backpedal. Mitt Romney, who predicted recently that he'd win, said today on MSNBC, "I think I'll be among the top finishers." Newt Gingrich, who said yesterday, "I don't think I'm going to win," today said on CBS's early show, "Anyone can come in first." Then there's Ron Paul. When asked whether he sees himself in the Oval Office, he said, "Not really, but I think it's a possibility," which has morphed on the internet into "Ron Paul doesn't see himself in the White House." We'll have more on today's developments in Iowa. But first, a question that's moving on the burners a bit, especially with these Hamlet-like reflections. Why are these candidates running? Newt Gingrich credits his wife's stubbornness. Calista Gingrich told the Christian Broadcasting Network, "There were several critical moments when I said to Newt, if we can just get to the debates, if we can just get to September." Mitt Romney, who ran in 2008, says his wife Ann convinced him to run this time. Here's CNN's Wolf Blitzer last week asking Ann Romney if that was true.
It is true. After the last campaign, it was kind of ironic that I was the one that said, "I'll never do this again." And now, this time around, I'm saying, "You know what, Mitt, you've got to do this again."
Did she talk you into running? Were you reluctant to run again?
Yeah, I was open to it, but we ran before, gave it our best shot. Ann was convinced that I'd run again, and she pushed that for a long time. And I was open to her her thoughts, but very much undecided. And then after several months, came to the same conclusion.
Glenn Johnson of the Boston Globe is in Des Moines. He's been covering the Romney campaign. So, Glenn, Mitt Romney says, you know, pretty much his wife made him do it. To which you say what?
Well, if she made him do it, maybe she finally pushed him into the pool. But he surely did everything to get ready for it for the last few years. You know, it may be a question of semantics, but virtually since the time he conceded the race in 2008 to John McCain, he's been laying the foundation to run a second time.
Well, make that case for us. You say right after he conceded in 2008, Romney endorsed John McCain, lent him a top fundraiser, connected him with an experienced manager. This is Meg Whitman, the former eBay chief. But, you know, so what? Some would say, well, that was a nice olive branch. Make your case that in that moment he also began running for this campaign.
Well, I mean, even as he tried to help John McCain with fundraising, with organization, and by himself as a surrogate speaker, he also founded the Free and Strong America PAC, which was his own campaigning vehicle. It allowed him to travel the country. It allowed him to raise money for himself and his staff, and it also allowed him to give out money and develop political chits with politicians all around the country. And then as soon as McCain lost, Romney retreated to his new home in La Jolla, California, and spent a lot of time there writing his book, No Apology. And that book, you constantly hear him referring to it on the trail. It's his campaign touchstone. It is the basis for his campaign. If he ever gets hit with a hard question, he refers people back to his book. And then he also tried to remain current in all the major conversations of the day by his chosen vehicle, which is the op-ed column. He would sit there and draft op-eds, place them in the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, National Review, National Republic. He really did work pretty assiduously throughout the last 3 years to get back to right where he is now, which is at the top of the polls in both Iowa and New Hampshire.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, Ann Romney says her husband wrote the book No Apologies out of frustration with the last campaign. She felt he wanted to get his message out. And everyone knows that Ann Romney has multiple sclerosis. And, you know, there was concern early on how fatiguing that would be. Thank goodness she's done quite well with it. But you say this is not only not true, you know, that Mitt Romney's arm had to be twisted, you know, for him to run in the race, but it also hides the fact that this campaign that he has put together over the last several years is one that he should be proud of.
Yeah, I think he's trying to avoid looking opportunistic with this sort of self-deprecation, self-effacement, saying they had to be talked into the race. But if you look at the way he's run his campaign, I think it actually provides strong testament to his management abilities and some of the qualities that people look for in a president. He's run a basically hiccup-free campaign here for 3 years. He's retained the core group of advisors around him. He's outraised the field. He's running with no debt. You know, there's a lot of complaints about the policies he espouses or whether he's flip-flopping from prior positions. But as an operation, as a manager, this is really a first test for any presidential candidate. And he's done quite well, especially in comparison to some of the others. You know, you've seen Newt Gingrich have his whole staff quit en masse on him. This just past week, Michelle Bachmann's Iowa campaign chairman quit on her. There's all sorts of histrionics always emerging out of the other camps, and the Romney campaign runs along like this machine. That is, you know, a prime test for a president. You've got to run a White House as well as deal with everything that crops up.
So you say that this should be something that the campaign is boasting about. Instead, it's sort of an, aw, shucks, my wife made me do it. This is not new from Mitt Romney. If this is what's motivating him, it's been going on for a long time. Here's Mitt Romney talking about what led him to run for the Senate against Massachusetts Democrat Ted Kennedy back in 1994. Let's listen.
Now, I've been living here for 23 years. And I've been saying, somebody ought to go after that guy. Somebody ought to do something about this. Somebody ought to fix that. Why is Ted Kennedy doing this? It's taking us in the wrong direction. Look what's happened to education. Why isn't someone doing something? And finally, about a year ago, my wife in bed one morning said, you got to run against Ted Kennedy. I just about fell out of bed. And she said it again, you've got to do it. If you're in a position to make a unique contribution as a citizen, you have an obligation to do so. And I was convinced that she was convinced that I could make a unique contribution. And that's what brings me here.
And Glenn Johnson of the Boston Globe, of course, that could have been exactly how it played out.
Right.
But New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd wrote this weekend in a column, I think it was entitled, My Wife Made Me Do It, that this is a way for politicians to be modest about their ambitions because people don't like, while they want somebody to be powerful, they don't want them to be ambitious.
Right. I think, actually, the much more factual statement from Mitt Romney, something that doesn't really get talked about a lot, is that it's more likely that his father is the one that has encouraged him. He's been dead now for a number of years, but you cannot overstate the importance of George Romney in Mitt Romney's life. He's been a real North Star for him through his career and on to the governorship. And even this morning, as Ann Romney introduced Mitt Romney for his final pre-caucus speech, she brought up George Romney. She almost welled up with tears as she talked about how they were all standing on his shoulders. And Mitt Romney, at this point in his career, has achieved everything that his father has achieved. He's been a success in business. He's been a governor of a state. He's also had the same failure, running for president and losing. And I don't think it's too much psychology or anything like that to state that he wants to do what his father tried to do and was unsuccessful in doing, and that is winning the presidency.
Boston Globe political reporter Glenn Johnson in Iowa. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Let's bring in Yahoo News senior political reporter Holly Bailey. She's also in Des Moines. Holly, we mentioned, of course, Ann Romney and Callista Gingrich. But just, you know, the other front runner is Ron Paul. Does his wife have a role on the campaign trail?
Not at all. She hasn't really been campaigning with him in Iowa. There's a big mystery about whether she'll show up on election night here in Iowa. But she really hasn't been much of a presence on the campaign trail for him.
Yeah. Then there's Rick Santorum's wife, Karen. We just want to flesh out this look at the spouses on the trail. They can have an impact. And there was a very painful and, you know, we should warn this is a tender subject, a tender moment on the trail last night. A voter asked the Santorums to respond to left-leaning Fox News commentator Alan Colmes. Now, Colmes had criticized the Santorums for bringing home their dead infant son from the hospital. He died a couple hours after birth in 1996. And Karen Santorum sobbed at this last night. Now, Colmes has apologized for his criticism, but a lot of parents get this new thinking to mourn a deceased infant, to let other children say goodbye. You know, it was quite a moment last night. I'm just wondering, you know, just what the impact of a humanizing and painful moment like that is.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons that you're seeing Rick Santorum sort of do well here in Iowa. For months, he's been out there sort of talking about these personal moments in his life. It's not just that he had suffered the death of an infant son. His youngest daughter is currently suffering from a genetic condition. She's had surgery on the campaign trail. You know, while he's been out on the campaign trail, she's been in the hospital. And he brings that up a lot. And I think that's part of the reason that, you know, that has sort of come to humanize his campaign, and one of the reasons that people are starting to sort of look to him and because they like him.
Yeah. And it also, you know, frankly, he's a social conservative, and for social conservatives, this is very important to know about family and know about a spouse. Just want to mention briefly another wife on the trail because she's been prominent, Anita Perry. She also did an ad for her husband. Let's listen to a little.
I'm Anita Perry. When Rick's tour of duty as a captain in the Air Force ended, he returned home to farm with his dad and asked me to marry him. We grew up in small towns.
Just your thoughts on the wives in general on the trail, Holly.
Well, Anita Perry is really interesting in that she has obviously been a force in her campaign and her husband's campaign. There was a few weeks ago, there was a shakeup in that he hired a new campaign manager, and she was one of the people that had encouraged him to do that. And she's been at his side here in Iowa. There was a funny moment on Saturday in which he told the voter that he didn't really expect to be governor of Texas for very much longer, sort of expressing confidence that he would turn his campaign around and win the nomination. But just moments later, she brought a sort of a dose of realism to the campaign in which she was asked about what her initiatives would be as first lady. And she said, well, we're not measuring the grapes just yet. We still have a long way to go. And so that sort of brought down the campaign a little bit more to realistic expectations.
And we, of course, mentioned Calista Gingrich. This, of course, tough. You know, it's Newt Gingrich's third wife. They'd had a 6-year affair before he married her. That's almost a whole separate subject. But I do, while we have you, Holly Bailey, want to ask about the candidate Newt Gingrich. You know, making this comment yesterday that some analysts said, wow, you know, talk about telling your people not to turn out, when he said he didn't think he'd win. Now, he'd walked back on that, but enough to send the message to his supporters, please come out.
I think, you know, that is a pretty damaging statement for his campaign, but it sort of reflects what an uneven performance he's had the past couple of days. On one hand, he said that he will not go negative on his opponents. Then he said he would. Then he said he wouldn't. He didn't expect to win Iowa. Then he walked that back and said he would. I think that, you know, he's sort of feeling the pressures of, you know, seeing his poll numbers really drop dramatically in the past week or so here.
Well, and he also today, in trying to walk back that, you know, saying that he wouldn't win, he also outright called Mitt Romney a liar for denying any responsibility for those negative ads that are from the Romney super PAC.
Right, and I think that's going to signal what moving on out of Iowa. All the campaigns are already starting to focus on what the ground game is after Iowa, and I think it's really going to be these candidates going after Mitt Romney. I mean, one of the striking things about Iowa has been that not one single candidate has run an ad specifically going after Romney alone, and I think that was a big miscalculation for these folks, because that is, you know, Romney has been able to rise above the fray and might possibly win tonight.
Yeah, well, and the Ron Paul statement that he doesn't see himself in the White House, in context, it makes more sense. You're sort of like, well, you know, it's a long shot. You know, nobody I guess this is the tough thing, Holly Bailey, for candidates. Voters want to know that you would be comfortable. And yet, on the other hand, it assumes a lot to say, sure, I see myself in the White House.
Yes, I think that there is an element of people being human and saying, yes, it is a long shot. But, you know, the question raises about electability, and people want to know that you're electable and you think you are electable.
Right. But just with just not too much pride. Holly Bailey, Yahoo News senior political reporter, joining us from Des Moines. As voters there head for the caucuses tonight. Holly, thanks as always.
Thank you.